at Mount Rushmore. Remember the cafeteria scene?
Yes.
Well, that was at Mount Rushmore, but we couldn't defame the monument, so the park commissioner would not allow us to crawl all over the monuments. Now, I have a little story about that. A fan of mine in New York City pointed out to me in that particular scene in the cafeteria just before I supposedly kill Cary Grant with the gun. Mm-hmm. Of course, I didn't really, but, I mean, even in the story, I didn't really. There in the background is a young boy sitting at one of the tables in the cafeteria with his back to me, and just before I pull the trigger, he puts his fingers in his ears. Now, we had rehearsed it many times, so he knew what was coming. Now, Mr. Hitchcock was so meticulous in everything he did. He must have seen that in the dailies. And to this, as I say this, I don't know whether he missed it, which I doubt, or he has the last laugh.
Wow, what a story.
Now, I even asked Patricia, his daughter, about it, and she hadn't noticed it. And then when she did, she didn't know either.
Now, you know what's funny is I've got that film in my limited collection at home, and when I go home tonight couple hours, the first thing I'm going to do is wind down to that scene.
And to stop it just before I pull the trigger.
Uh-huh.
Look in the background, and you'll see a young boy whose back is to me, so he doesn't even see me with a gun, but he knows that the actress is going to pull the trigger.
Right.
So did he not have the last laugh? I mean, we'll never know.
I know. Wow.
But he must have seen it, though.
What a story.
Because he is so meticulous. I remember I had many fittings for that, and he wasn't that happy with the clothes, and he took me to New York, and we went to one of the big beautiful department stores, and he sat me down, and he said, "Whatever you want, Eva Marie." Well, from then I called him my sugar daddy. I mean, that's the closest to having a sugar daddy. And I remember that black dress with the red embossed roses. I love that. He said, "It's yours, my dear."
On now to the two projects that you have coming up in May. I want to start with the Dominic Dunn story, only because a lot of people have read that book and they're familiar with it, people like us, in which he goes through the tragic murder of his daughter, and a man who served, in his view and everybody's view, far too little time for that killing, and his desire to avenge his daughter's murder in reality, but he couldn't, so he did it in fiction. Huh?
Yes, yes. He actually was on the set one day, and
he's a terrific guy, by the way. Yeah.
Yes, I've known him for many, many years. We all started in the golden age of television, live television, and that's where I knew Nicky Dunn, he was called then.
That's right.
And so in the story, People Like Us, that is part of the story, and I'm sure it was a kind of a catharsis. But it is about that and the loss of his daughter, the murder of his daughter, and the bored, beautiful, rich people of New York. It was fun for me to play Lil because she is kind of a rich bitch.
Yeah, bored, beautiful.
Bored,
yeah.
And not a very giving person. Gives a lot to her dogs. And doesn't have a good relationship with her daughter or her son. And is rather a tragic figure. But I feel that it's beautifully written because I think you care about all of us, hopefully, in the movie.
Now, when you do a show like that that's based upon a successful novel, I'm sure the novel is required reading for every member of the cast, right?
I hadn't read it before I started the film, but then when I went to New York, I read it on the airplane.
All right, so that going in, you have an idea of the beginning, middle, and end of the piece, right?
Many of the characters were cut. It's just down to the characters he wanted to talk about. Yes, there's certain signposts, certain things about Lil that were very helpful, along with my interpretation using three or four people I know of that.
Really? Bored, rich, bitch?
Well, nice people. I don't spend too much time with them, but the ladies who don't work, but work the maintenance, their own personal maintenance of hair, clothes, and makeup, manicures, pedicures almost daily, and lunch with the ladies.
I take it you don't do that as a regular thing.
No, I'm not a workaholic, but I do feel at the end of the day that I should have accomplished something.
Something, right.
I think it comes from my dad was with B.F. Goodrich, and he worked 6 days out of seven, and I come from that era where people really worked hard.
What, did he sell tires?
He did. He was a district credit manager.
District credit manager. So he decided who got tires on time and who didn't?
I'm not sure. He did a lot of training of people, of other men. One of the most exciting things that happened to me as a young person thinking about B.F. Goodrich, when I would see my father get out of the car and come up the walk, this was in Albany, New York, and he would be carrying a film in one of the tin, not a cassette, a
film, like a movie film in a big can.
And my mom would see him coming, and she would go to the closet and take out the screen. That meant we were going to have movies. So before he even got into the house, I'd call my best friend, and she would come over. My mother would make popcorn, and my sister and her friend and my friend, and we would sit there. And you know what that was? It was a training film. But it was black and white, and it was movies in our house.
Right. Magic time.
Magic time. I mean, my dad actually loved movies. We went to the movies almost every Saturday night when I was growing up. I mean, that's what you did. You didn't watch television.
There wasn't none.
No.
Mm-mm. There wasn't any television to watch. Mm-hmm. And the movie, remember when the movies had a short subject? There was always like a cartoon. And then there was a newsreel, to be sure, and sometimes a short comedy. What, remember the one, the guy who was always behind the eight ball? Remember the guy I mean? Joe Miller? No. Somebody was always behind. No. It was this.
Not Joe Palooka.
No. But there was a guy, he was always behind the eight ball. It was about 12 minutes, and it was semi-funny. You know what I mean? A one real little comedy, and then there were two movies, too. Two regular features besides all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. Now you go, and there's nothing. There's the feature and a bunch of ads for, well, here it's the LA Times newspaper ad, and then the ad for the popcorn and the shoot 'em ups to come.
You know what I resent? If one chooses to see Driving Miss Daisy, which I thought was such a beautiful film, mm-hmm. I'd seen the play. I was anxious to see the movie. So we decided that night to go see that movie. But before the movie, it was about 12 minutes of the most violent film.
Tell me about it, yeah.
People going through plate glass windows, car crashing, women with guns, people killing. And you chose not to see those films, but you have to sit there. You know what I do now? I go, and you try that in a movie house after some of these violent trailers, and everybody will join in with you.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes.
I'll tell you,
it's not a very nice thing to do, but I just go, I can't stand all that.
People are very, they're very sensitive about noise in theaters now. You can't, like if you or I were to go and see a picture and I would say, boy, was that a great scene. Shut up back there. You know, they don't, you're not allowed to whisper anything in the movies anymore. You know, you used to be able to, what'd he say? Quiet back there. You know, the people are very offended by noise. I'm surprised they go along with you hissing.
Try it.
Okay, I will. I don't like those trailers for the violent. How was the movie of Daisy? I've seen the play. But
it was so beautifully done. It was a case where, I mean, I love the play and I love the movie as much as I'd seen the play twice. And the way they opened it up, and it was, I think it is so exciting that it is such a successful movie. I think that helps all of us in today's world of violence.
How would you like to be, though, Michelle Pfeiffer, who gives one of her great performances the year that Jessica Tandy decides to do Driving Miss Daisy?
Oh, I know. That's the name of the game. I know.
Hey, Morgan Freeman, the guy that the year this fella in My Left Foot, I guess, gives the performance of a lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we're going to switch gears after the commercials. Get
everything I've done, photos, shooting schedules, reviews, and
reviews
and publicity. That's sort of just a hobby of mine, and I'll leave it with the Academy and so forth. And I keep a day-by-day journal. You'll be in my journal tonight.
Thank you. And I just, I have such a reverence for the way Hollywood keeps to its history. You know, broadcasting, we throw our history away. We keep none of it. I mean, what we do here is erased, what, a week later? And what we did on the Tomorrow Show is, most of it is gone. Milton Berle, when they were putting together the Broadcast Museum's television archive in New York, I don't know if you recall, they advertised in newspapers if anybody had anything in their basements, because we've burned everything up. You know what I'm saying?
Look at the kinescopes in the live days of television.
Yeah, gone.
So many of them are gone, but here in UCLA they have several that they've sent to me, like Middle of the Night with E.G. Marshall. I thought that was lost forever, but that's true. And then Patty Chayefsky, many of his things. He was that wonderful writer, and many of his things are gone.
A lot of Ernie Kovacs is gone.
Mm-hmm.
And That's why I wish, well, you do have a journal, thank God, but you really ought to think about having somebody, even if you want some help, putting a book together. If for no other reason that you carry an awful lot of history, and I think it's important history. I remember being in a room one night at the Bel Air Country Club in California where Hal Roach celebrated his 90th birthday. And in the room was Hal Roach and King Vidor, God rest his soul. And I thought, Jesus, I said, these two guys, since movies were invented, they carry with them the whole history of the whole business in their minds. And at the time, and Hal Roach is still mentally alert and active, you know, King Vidor has checked out. But I have such a reverence for that kind of history, and I hate for it to be lost.
That's how I feel about Lillian Gish. The first play I was ever in New York, the trip to Bountiful, was with Lillian Gish, and we've remained friends ever since. And look how much she gives back. I mean, when she gives those seminars, say at UCLA, one time I went...
Well, she goes back to D.W. Griffith
to the
and the Birth of a Nation, sure. The very beginnings of motion.
She's about
pictures.
The only spokesperson for that time.
You know who I was great pals with in New York, God rest her soul, was Gloria Swanson.
Mm.
Oh, what a great lady she was. What a great, great lady she was. And there's one who went way, way back, you know, to the very beginning as a telephone operator on a soap opera called Rosemary. True, huh?
Number, please. This is your long-distance operator.
And was that on a station in Albany or Bowling Green State University? Where was that?
New York City.
New York? On the network or on a station?
Network.
And the show was called Rosemary.
Mm-hmm.
And how long did you do that? Stop with these one-word answers. Come on. You haven't given me one-word answers all night.
What was the question? Yes. Do you know, when I went to New York, it took me 1 year to be able to pay my own bills. I lived at home for a year. My dad was living in Flushing with my mom at that time. So my goal was that a year from the day I started making rounds that I'd be on my own financially, and I was. And a little before that, but it took one whole year to break into radio. Radio was a hard nut to crack. I was doing commercials on television and live television shows, but I couldn't get into radio for a whole year, and I was living with my roommate, and she was really in radio. I mean, every time the phone rang, it was for my roommate. And at that time, then I realized it wouldn't be so easy being married to an actor because I was so jealous of Peggy by the time that year was up. All those phone calls were for her.
You know what's wonderful and really refreshing is when you hear a woman say, or a man say, I was living with my roommate and she, or if it were a man in that time period, I was with my roommate and he. There was none of this stuff we have today where roommates are he's and she's living together. It wasn't done in those days.
No. This was in a little apartment in Morningside Drive, and my landlady's name was Mrs. Abernathy, and there were three rules. If the two girls, Peggy and myself, took the room, no men, no smoking, and no drinking.
No drinking.
Mm-hmm. And it was one room, two twin beds, and then the kitchen and the bathroom. That was one room. Over the bathtub was the table. That's the way it was.
No, but that's the way it was. Mm-hmm. And I would assume that, what was her name, Mrs.
Abernathy.
Abernathy needed the income from you and Peggy to keep herself going.
But I remember I did a beer commercial, Pabst Blue Ribbon Beer, and they paid me, but they were so nice, they sent me a case of beer. But it arrived before I arrived home that night, and she was outside waiting for me. She said, I said, no drinking.
Uh-huh.
So I sent that to my dad, I think.
Gotcha. And how long did you live with Mrs. Abernathy?
Oh, that was for about 7 months,
yeah.
I think. Every time I went in to pay the rent, I'd knock on the door. She would say, come in. And she was always in bed with her hat on, polishing shoes. I never saw her upright, except that one time when she said, I told you, no drinking. No drinking, Miss Saint.
And I'm going to guess $8 a week.
Probably. But we had to share because we couldn't afford it ourselves.
Right.
But that was the first job. And then I had a small part on one of them. But see, radio then paid so much money. It was like $30 a show. So if you were on 5 days a week, that truly paid more than that month's rent.
And also, did radio pay more than television then?
Oh, yes.
Television was so new.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah, who was the guy? Was it Huntley? one of the newscasters, when they went to him and they said, we want you to do the television for the Philadelphia convention in 48, he says, I don't want to do that. There's only three stations. I want to be on the radio where there was, 400 stations. Mm-hmm. Hey, who knew? Here is Tom now in Eagle River, Wisconsin. Hello.
Hello there, Tom.
Hi, Thomas.
And Eva, and it's a pleasure to be able to talk with you tonight. And I have two questions, and number one is, how was it working with Marlon?
Brando was a prince to work with.
Uh-huh.
It was my first film, and he knew it was. And it was very cold in Hoboken, and we shot a lot at night, during the nighttime, and he was always giving me his coat, and he was just one of the dearest, sweetest leading men I've ever have worked with. Always wanted to work with him again, but never have. Now, Jackie Gleason, if you recall, in Nothing in Common, I only had one scene with him. And he was holding court on the set. He was everything that you thought he might be. But
he was truly the great one, wasn't he?
But yeah. I remember in live television doing a Texaco commercial or something on that show.
Uh-huh.
I wasn't doing the commercial. I was doing something on that show. So I did know him or met him years ago.
He was something, I'll tell you. Today people talk about him. I was watching Bob Costas the other night, and Dear Alice Cramden was on. You know who I mean, Audrey Meadows. And she talked about, remember how at the end of the piece, Ralph knew he had done something terrible to Alice. And he would stand behind her and kind of contort his face, trying to figure out, what am I going to say to Alice to make up for the terrible thing I've done to her? And, of course, the audience is screaming in laughter. And as she said, the first few times, she said, I didn't know what he was doing back there because I didn't see it till it came on TV, on the replay. And she said he was back there, and the audience was screaming in laughter. And she said, I didn't know what he was doing. And then she said, now I watched it, and I knew what he was doing, but I couldn't laugh, because she had to stay in character when he was back there, doing it. He was something else, I'll tell you. It's Chestertown, Maryland. Hello.
Good evening, Tom. I'm originally from Philadelphia. Enjoyed your many shows there.
Thank you.
And I would like to tell you how much Eva Marie Saint meant to me and how much pleasure I derived from her pictures. I read a couple books about Alfred Hitchcock, and I wondered if he ever was as hard to work with as I interpreted some of the books.
Well, I've read most of those books, and the dark side, as they call it, of Hitchcock. My experience was just the opposite. I never saw the dark side. I don't know why, but I've heard from the other blondes, the other cool blondes, that they didn't have such an easy time. But I really thought of him as a teddy bear. I was happily married to the same man I'm still married to. Maybe I don't know.
I think your conception is the best, and I'm certainly glad it is. But I did enjoy speaking to you, and especially Tom, because I just read a book of Tony Randall's, and Tom's mentioned in it, and an incident that happened in Philadelphia.
What?
I didn't know he knew that.
I'll tell you something. Hang on here and tell us. I'll talk to you later off the air about what the incident was. For some reason, Tony Randall has been upset with me for a long time. Well, now, what? Are you still there?
Yeah.
Okay, hold on. I got a ding-dong Dell, Pussy's in the Well, right, where he's there with the young chick, and you're the wife in the sensational movie. God, I want to ask you about that picture. I don't have any time. It really steams me. Anyway, tell the dates of the Achille Lauros is May 1st and 2nd, syndication. May 13th and 14th is People Like Us, NBC TV, and tomorrow night is Corita at the Art Museum, and then it's on PBS in October.
Yes, correct.
All right, I'll tell you right now, I'm calling David Kramer and Associates in early October, and you're coming back in, and we'll give that one shtick, and then we go on to loving.
Okay, I'll be back.
I love you, Eva Marie Saint. God bless
you,
and thanks for coming in. And
you're welcome.
We'll
I'll be back.
See you around the corner. All right, young lady.
Thanks.
Eva Marie Saint, I'm TS, and this is the Tuesday Night Radio Show. Thanks for listening, friends.